Hello, I'm Lee Meller. This is number 0204, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0204. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Ace Callwood, who is one of the co-founders of Coffeetivity, a new website that provides fake coffee shop noises to enhance your creativity. How did this venture begin?
Justin, my partner, and I work in academia. We read a lot of research and white papers. I was perusing a white paper that kind of cited that moderate level of ambient noise as conducive to creative cognition. Fast forward 3 or 4 weeks, and Justin and I had been rebranding our first startup, and we were just in and out of coffee shops getting awesome work done with a designer and just thinking about things really creatively. And so Justin went back to work. He was in just a really quiet work environment. And he was like, I need to go to a coffee shop to get some creative work done today. His boss wouldn't let him, and so he decided, hey, if I can't go to the coffee shop, I'm going to bring it to me.
Filmmaker Ryan Oxenberg, who has started a new and interesting film series on YouTube called Lifeline Booth, that dresses up a payphone on LA Skid Row.
Who uses payphones these days? Mostly transients, homeless people. I just thought, hey, why don't we set these things up, make them look pretty, donate a bunch of items to them, and see how the people will react. So it first started off as an art installation project, but then what it turned into is using the image of the payphone as a metaphor to communicate with these people who don't really have a voice.
Alex Sanga is the author of Catalyst, a collection of commentaries to get us talking.
The Catalyst is actually the young adults and the high school students and the youth who read my columns and who are inspired to bring about change in their communities. My goal in writing this was to pick 40 of my favorite columns and add some questions and some quotes and some pictures and some text and get people thinking, get people talking, get people discussing, and get them to make some change. And the Catalyst is actually the readers. That's the meaning behind the name.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0204, was Lee Meller, who is the author of Rampage and also Cold North Killers Canadian Serial Murder, two books that deal with Canadian murderers. And you can follow the links on the website, thestufffile.com, which will take you to links to Lee's website. Just go to today's show, which, as Lee mentioned, was 0204. By the way, Lee has been a guest on this show not once, but twice. He was a guest on 0186 and 0133, talking about his two books, respectively. And you can just go on to thestufffile.com and find those shows and listen if you want to hear it again. Or for the first time, if you missed it the first time around, and if you did, shame on you, to the times that Lee was on the program. And again, thank you very much, Lee, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, Dana Boyles released her adult daughter's 4.5-foot python, Delilah. Why, Delilah? From their Athens, Ohio residence, she admits, after her daughter stopped feeding it. Boyles allegedly told a sheriff's deputy that she intended to run it over with a lawnmower, but the snake escaped. Okay, let's stop right there. Who the hell comes up with a bizarre Rube Goldberg kind of scheme to kill a snake with a lawnmower? This is another Wile E. Coyote moment, right here. That's what I'm saying. Right now. Anyway, Hawking Woods Nature Center director Dave Sagan located and captured Delilah. While some residents expressed concern about a snake on the loose, Sagan said it was too small to be of any kind of danger. Delilah is being held at the Nature Center until local authorities decide what to do with it. Meanwhile, Athens County Sheriff Pat Kelly announced that snake hunters spotted some marijuana plants inside a trailer at the park, leading to a search of the premises. And that turned up other drugs and paraphernalia and a 5-year-old child in the house. This case has been referred to Children's Services. The evidence will be sent to the lab for testing, Kelly said. Wow. You know, all of a sudden, the announcer part of me has the uncontrollable urge to say, all this and more on the next episode of Jerry Springer. Yikes. Anyway, Scotland's Parliament was revealed in May to be considering, as part of its Children and Young People Bill, guaranteeing that specific named persons would be appointed for every Scottish child at birth charged with overseeing that child's welfare until adulthood. A Daily Telegraph story acknowledged that the bill is remarkably vague about the duties and powers of the designated person, and thus it is unclear how the law might affect typical parent-child relationships. Okay, I'm sorry, but isn't what this bill suggests exactly what parents are supposed to do anyway? Just who exactly came up with the drafting of this bill, and what kind of mommy and daddy issues do they have? Seriously. Anyway, it was a long night for the Iowa City, Iowa police. The bomb squad was brought in to check out a suspicious package placed in a newspaper box by a bank at the end of an art festival. It was about 11:30 p.m. on a Sunday. Maurice Graham, age 44, was arrested and charged with public intoxication after he wandered into the crime scene, which was apparently cordoned off. Next was Tobias Herman, age 58, who, after observing what was going on, allegedly yelled, "Boom!" at the officers. He also was arrested for public intoxication. But Stephen Crittenden, age 32, got the prize. When he learned what was happening outside, he allegedly came out of a bar, lit a silver bomb firecracker, tossed it into the street, and went back into the bar. He refused to speak to the officers who questioned him, but in a pat-down, they found two more silver bombs on him. His public intoxication charge was dropped by prosecutors so they could focus on a more serious count, reckless use of explosives. Okay, now, though that sounds more calculated than reckless, by the way, I'm just wondering, how many people actually walk around with firecrackers in their pockets? There's a Mae West line just there as low-hanging fruit, if you want to go after it, by the way. And police officers really have tough enough jobs as it is when it comes to dealing with drunks. Now they're carrying around firecrackers in their pockets? Yeah. Must be fun to be in Iowa City, Iowa. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Florida woman who planted a kiss on a police officer's nose as he mediated a dispute between her and a neighbor got herself cuffed and charged with a felony. Peggy Hill, age 62, of Bradenton, was speaking with Manatee County Sheriff's Officer Sergeant Randy Lamb late Saturday, who was summoned to the neighborhood to resolve a fight over the placement of a fence between two residences. Lamb said he was speaking with Hill when she approached him and kissed him on the nose against his will. Lamb, an 18-year veteran, stepped away from Hill and wiped the saliva off his nose. Ew. With the help of another deputy, Lamb gently took Hill to the ground and handcuffed her. In a post-arrest interview, Hill admitted to drinking three glasses of wine prior to her encounter with the police. She said, "The thought just popped into her head, to kiss Lamb on the nose." Hill was charged with felony battery and is being held in lieu of a $5,000 bond. So basically, she loses by a nose. Yes. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Listen to the sound that you hear in the background. Listen. Listen a little longer. According to research, ambient coffee shop noises hovering in the right decibel range breeds productive creativity more than an environment in which you might actually be able to hear a pin drop. So enter Coffeetivity, a new website that provides fake coffee shop noises to enhance your creativity. That's what you're hearing right now. Okay, so we're going to drop the coffee shop cacophony in the background while we talk to Ace Callwood, who is one of the co-founders of Coffeetivity. He joins us on the line via Skype-to-Skype communications from Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Ace.
Hey, thanks for having me, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So how did this idea come about? This sounds great.
It was what we kind of call a perfect storm of opportunities. And so I had actually, Justin, my partner and I, work in academia. We read a lot of research and white papers. And so I was perusing a white paper that kind of cited that moderate level of ambient noise as conducive to creative cognition is what the research cites. Fast forward 3 or 4 weeks, and Justin and I had been rebranding our first startup, and we were just in and out of coffee shops getting awesome work done with a designer and just thinking about things really creatively. And so Justin went back to work on a Monday or a Tuesday. He was in just a really quiet work environment, very office-y setting. And he was like, I need to go to a coffee shop to get some creative work done today. His boss wouldn't let him. And so he decided, hey, if I can't go to the coffee shop, I'm going to bring it to me. And so that perfect storm kind of happened where I had passed on the idea of the research. And he comes to me with an idea of how to really make it a reality. And so we started cranking away.
So in his boss's situation, his boss wouldn't let him go to the coffee shop. So he brought, in essence, the noise to him. The boss had no problem with that?
No, not at all. I mean, he had it plugged in his headphones, and that's that was the idea, was no matter where you are, whether you're at home or in the office or somewhere in between, you can always have those creative vibes of a coffee shop with you.
Okay, so once you figured out this is the way to go, how did you go about actually getting the sounds of the coffee shop?
Sure. So we actually linked up with a producer, audio engineer friend of ours.
Right.
And we actually visited, I think, 7 or 8 coffee shops to get the right noise that we wanted. But we finally settled into one right in the middle of Richmond, and we recorded right there. So we recorded upstairs, kind of in the eating area, and downstairs towards the kitchen. And we got just some awesome audio, and went from there.
So what was the makeup of the room in the one that you've chosen for Coffeetivity? In other words, how many people were there? Did that make a difference? The size of the room, that kind of thing?
Sure. I think partly the day we decided to record maybe wasn't the best. So we ended up on a Sunday, like after the brunch rush. And so we were in, so like I said, we visited several coffee shops. And they were all kind of dead on that Sunday afternoon. So the one we ended up in was more of a cafe, and so there was a lot of eating going on. And so probably 30-ish people between upstairs and downstairs, and then the kitchen was still going pretty heavily. So we got the clanking that you hear where a lot of plates and dishes being washed, the people eating, and then that conversation of people just enjoying. So there were a couple families in there. Which really contributed to the sounds I think you hear.
Now, so you gather the sounds, you decide this is going to be a website. So talk us through how it gets to us, the general public.
Sure. So Justin comes up with an idea. I say, Justin, that's a terrible idea. We don't need to waste time on that. He said, we're going to do it anyway. From there, we went and recorded. So we actually, recording was the first thing we did. And then we kind of pulled up and said, hey, neither one of us knows how to build a website. And so after a couple of rounds of rock, paper, scissors, it was decided that Justin was going to learn how to code. We didn't actually play rock, paper, scissors, but we were very non-tech founders when the thing started. And Justin said, hey, I've always wanted to learn how to code. This is going to be the first thing we build. And so Justin dove into Code Academy, Lynda, a couple of those Skillshare, a couple of the websites that help you learn. And he built the site over the course of a month. We linked up with a graphic designer who just made it beautiful. She was awesome in plugging in and giving you kind of the visual comfort that you get when you come to the site. And it took us about a month to build. And so we used the original recording. So we used Coffeetivity to build Coffeetivity, super meta, if you will. But it took us about a month to get to kind of what you guys see now. A lot of iterations, a lot of late nights, a lot of coffee shop working, and a lot of yelling at each other. Mm. And now you have the site.
Now, have you did you have to get permission from the coffee shop to record in there? And if so, what do they think of all this?
We did. So we went into Harrison Street Cafe and we said, hey, this is kind of what we're doing. We're working on this project. We certainly didn't expect it to be as prolific as it is right now. So we went in, we said, hey, this is what we're doing. Do you mind turning the music down? So they were cooperative and awesome in helping us out. And then, so we've told them and we've certainly pointed people back to that's where we started, and they were helpful. So hopefully we're driving some traffic to them right now.
Well, let's plug the name of the place. Where is it?
It's a Harrison Street Cafe right in the middle of Richmond, Virginia.
Okay. So now you put this site up.
Uh-huh.
What's the reaction been like, and are you surprised by the reaction?
Certainly unexpected reaction. We built something that we knew we'd use. Like I said, we used it to build it. And we expected our friends and family to use it. You know, the first day we had 120 page views, and as Justin jokes, it was probably our moms looking at it 120 times. But from there, some press kind of heard about what we were doing, and it really clicked for a lot of people. A lot of our users who come back every day. And so, you know, in 4 short months, we're at going on 3 million page views, and just so many people have connected and said, hey, this is exactly what I need to boost my creativity, or drown my kids in the background in the next room out, or just put me in that vibe of, hey, I can get some really awesome work done.
You started all this because of research material that you had, which told you this is the best way to be creative. So now that you've done it, have you now heard any word back from the research community saying, yep, these guys are absolutely correct, and here's why?
Not so much people coming out and saying coffeetivity is what it says it is. You know, we started with peer-reviewed research, which was huge. So it's already gone through the ringer on the validity. And that was great. It was great to start with that and say, hey, what we're doing is research tested. We have had quite a few PhDs come through the site, and nobody has raised a red flag or sounded an alarm. So we're stoked, and it seems to be copacetic with everybody.
Where do you see this going? Can you picture doing other background noise equivalents to coffee shops to help in someone's creativity?
Yeah. For one, we're expanding our audio base right now. So here pretty soon we'll be releasing a couple more audio tracks from various shops in Richmond. We'd love, and so we'll have some guidelines coming to the site pretty soon. We'd love our community and our fan base to help us out with some audio. And so they'll actually have an opportunity to send in audio from their favorite shops, be it a French cafe, an Italian bistro, an Indian coffee shop. And so we'll be able to get those sounds, and then you'll be able to do all of that offline as well. So we've got our iOS apps coming out here pretty soon, hopefully within the next couple of weeks. And so we've got a whole community of things to be done.
And is this turning into a money-making venture for you guys?
As soon as those apps come out, it will. So we'll be selling the apps in the App Store, and there will be a Mac app as well for Mac users to use on their desktop.
Well, as I said, isn't technology grand? I mean, this is just an amazing idea that you guys have come up with. And it was, again, something that you guys were working on, but I don't think you could foresee the attention it was going to draw, could you?
Not at all. No. And so once it blew up, we did some things to sustain that. We were very careful in how we continued growth. But the initial blow up was certainly unexpected.
Do you always work with it now in the background?
I do pretty frequently. And so I've actually been, we've all been beta testing the iOS app. So I get to use it. I'll be on the train tomorrow with it on as I write. And so, yeah, we're in and out of it every day.
Again, great idea. People can check out the website, which is coffeetivity.com. That's coffeetivity.com, correct?
That's right.
Ace, I thank you very, very much for doing this.
Peter, I appreciate you having me.
Ace Callwood, co-founder of Coffeetivity. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0204, and you'll find links to the Coffeetivity site.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to Ryan Oxenberg, the filmmaker behind Lifeline Booth, plus Alex Sanga, author of Catalyst, a collection of commentaries to get us talking. And of course, there's an idiot of the day coming your way, plus a lot of Stuff File news still to get to right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, Ocean's 11 they're not, but this diabolical duo came up with a plan just as clever. It seems a Tennessee homeowner was distracted by a naked woman swimming in his backyard pool. The 54-year-old man told police that a man and a woman who lived nearby approached his house to talk to him. Now, during the conversation, the man excused himself to go back home to retrieve cigarettes. Alone with the victim, the woman asked him about the pool and if she could take a swim. He told the woman it would be okay and led her to the rear of his house where the pool was located. Now, the woman then asked if it would bother him if she swam in the nude, and he replied that it would not. She proceeded to take off her clothes and jumped into the pool, swimming for about 20 minutes. The homeowner retrieved a towel from inside his house. The woman dried off, dressed, and left. It was at that point he re-entered his home to discover that he had been robbed of a handgun, jewelry, and medication. The loss was placed at about $1,195. Now, while the two suspects have been identified, they have not been found by police for questioning. You know, you have to admit that this is kind of ingenious. And it's ironic because just recently I saw an adult film with a very similar plot, and since it was an adult film, it went a little beyond a swim. Okay, I know what you're thinking, but I swear, I was watching it purely for research. I was looking to find an adult film that actually had a plot. Okay? A Colombian prisoner, Giovanni Rebolado, was serving a 60-year sentence as a member of the Los Topos gang charged with extortion, kidnapping, and torture when he escaped and decided on an extreme identity change in order to move on and get around about the country. He became Rosalinda, complete with, according to Colombian Reports News Service, impressive breast implants, but nonetheless was identified in May in a routine traffic stop and arrested. Well, I'm sure he'll have new friends now when he returns back to prison with those, what were they called? Impressive. Yes. Or some people might call them bodacious tatas. In Kobe, Japan, in May, an unemployed 32-year-old man carried out a minor theft, stealing a wallet from a park scooter, apparently just to be locked up in the world-famous city. Besides being the home of Kobe beef, it is acclaimed for its French, Chinese, and octopus cuisines, and in fact, Kobe's Nagata Ward precinct is renowned for the special gourmet box meals prepared by local bento shops delivered daily to prisoners, which the thief said was foremost on his mind. Wow, you know, I know there is food to die for, but I never heard about food to be locked up for. But there you go. Also in May, an Orlando Sentinel columnist demanded a federal investigation into the 2010 police killing of Tory Breedlove in Orlando's Pine Hills neighborhood, noting that killing the unarmed Breedlove somehow required 137 shots, with cops missing on at least 115. The columnist added that the Justice Department is currently investigating a Cleveland, Ohio case in which local police killed two unarmed men, but coincidentally also required 137 shots. In both cases, the officers were exonerated after local investigators determined the officers believed the suspects were armed. Okay, what these cops could definitely use is more time at the firing range. Yeah, because I don't know where those stray bullets are going, but that's a problem. Well, shooting people is a problem, but stray bullets, that's also a problem. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we go to Whitby in the UK. The town councilman there, by the name of Simon Parks, who is 58, confessed to a reporter in June that he had had an extramarital affair, in fact, an extraterrestrial extramarital affair, with a 9-foot-tall cat queen, and that she had borne him a child. Parks said the cat queen is biding her time until technology is available to bring her and the child to Earth. Said Parks, "There are plenty of people in my position who don't choose to come out and say it because they are terrified it will destroy their careers." Parks said his wife knows about his periodic meetings with the cat queen and is, quote, "very unhappy, clearly," unquote. Okay. Again, I remind you that this is an elected official. So, this guy says his wife is very unhappy, clearly, with his extramarital affair with an extraterrestrial. I'm just wondering, is she unhappy that her husband is having an affair with someone from outer space? Or is she unhappy because she's married to a wingnut who has now thrust her unwillingly into the public eye? I don't know. 50-50. You decide. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Ryan Oxenberg has an interesting pet project that you can find on YouTube. It's called Lifeline Booth. What he and some friends have done is use payphones in LA's Skid Row and in the middle of the night anonymously upgrade it with furniture. The result is a series of short documentary films, the first of which is already online. Ryan joins us via Skype-to-Skype communication from L.A. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So you've put this phone booth, kind of like Art Deco phone booth, with furniture and an awning. Where did the idea for this come from?
It actually came to me in high school. There was, or junior high, there was a rumor going around, I remember, where it was on the news and stuff, or at least in Canada and Toronto, where I'm from, that people were hiding needles in the change slots of payphones, and there was this whole scare. And this was before cell phones. Well, it was during the time of brick cell phones and stuff, but where people were scared to use payphones because they thought they'd get pricked by a needle that had AIDS or some sort of disease. So I started feeling bad for some reason for payphones, and then I thought, hey, maybe one day I'll just make it decorated and make it look really cool and bring them back. But then people started buying, my friends started showing up to school with those Nokia 310s and stuff, and then I just was walking around downtown LA, and there were a few scattered payphones, and I thought, hey, who uses payphones these days? Mostly transients, homeless people, no one else. And I just thought, hey, why don't we set these things up, make them look pretty, give them, donate a bunch of items to them and see how the people will react. So it first started off as an art installation project, but then what it turned into is using the image of the payphone as a metaphor to communicate with these people who don't really have a voice. Not a lot of people will go into Skid Row. Everyone thinks it's dangerous, which it is, and in a dirty place where diseases spread around and stuff. So I kind of just want to break that mold. And here's a way, whether you want to go there or not, here's a way for you to learn from them and hear what they have to say and share their stories and shatter the mold of what homeless people are over there and these people who are addicts and stuff, that they actually have something to say and that they are articulate.
So you gathered, as I said, you gathered furniture and other items. You got chairs. You also put up a board that people can leave messages. Where did you get the items, first of all, that you decorated the phone booths or the booths with?
All the items I found driving in my car, and I see a chair on the street. So first I just inspect it, make sure it's in decent condition. Then I just throw it in my car and wash it down. And then the food and stuff just comes out of our pockets.
So in the first film, and again, people can see it on YouTube. The link is up on our website. The film is called Lifeline Booth. In the film, how long of a period of time are we talking about that you've set this up until the time that it is slowly, I guess, taken apart by the people who live in the area? Because they take some items, right?
Yeah. None of these booths really lasted more than 18 hours. I'd come back and everything was gone. One woman told me that she recognized us, or she recognized the booth, and told me that she used the cloth that we drape over the awning as a blanket. So everything, it's completely recyclable. The minute you put it up, these booths, it's extinct, and for all the good reasons, because people could find use for every single bit of it. It's not litter. We were worried, the cops are going to ticket us for littering. No, they just drive by and smile and know that we're not selling anything, we're not asking for anything, and that that people will take it. And I've walked around and seen these items reappropriated for use. So it's completely sustainable and recyclable.
So you say the cops aren't bothering you. I've seen the first edition of the film. When I was watching it, the thing that I was thinking about is, were you getting any kind of harassment from the phone company? Because, you know, they're very particular about their property, even though it's not necessarily kept up in the best shape, certainly in Skid Row.
No harassment from the phone company, but with property owners and the cops, there was a conflict that we got into, and you'll have to tune into the second episode for that.
Okay. Have you given any thought, since you are obviously going to continue to do this, have you given any thought of letting the phone company know what you're doing? Maybe they might want to get involved.
Yeah, that would be nice. Just it's a small crew, and I'm directing and editing and putting these together. I'm trying to assemble a team of people who can do that, or have some sort of connection, or, you know, asking for charity, asking for funding from companies. So that's a step in the very near future that I want to take. It's,
How many people besides yourself are involved in doing this?
Under 10.
Under 10. And where would you like to see this go? I mean, you're obviously going to continue doing this to a certain degree. How many episodes would you like to do? What do you want the audience to take away from this? Is it more of a social awareness kind of thing that you're getting through here? What's your goal?
Social awareness, shattering the stigma of these areas that are notoriously known for their criminal activity, drugs, and the people there. And also for people the dream of this would be for people to imitate it and make their own. And then we find out about other areas like Skid Row around the country or other countries. And it would just be this ongoing dialogue.
You, as I mentioned, you have a message board that you put up. What are some of the messages that you've received so far in doing this, not only in the first one, but in subsequent ones? And what are you personally learning about the people who live in the area?
I'm learning that they have dreams. And no matter what situation they're in, and they have their dreams and they're sticking by them, and they're, it's still kind of keeping them alive. Despite the conditions that they're in, And that's what a lot of the notes suggest, whether it's God or some sort of idea of people helping people, or this booth made my day, or I have dreams of going to school. It's all those things that those are the kind of things that they're writing and open my eyes to. Wow, they're still not giving up. There's something saying, hey, I got to continue on.
Are you hoping that other people will do a similar situation, a similar project in their cities? Or would you like yourself to go to other cities and duplicate this experiment?
I don't know if I'm going to go to other cities. If the opportunity came up, I'd totally be open to it. This is just a pet project of mine, and I'm going to do whatever I can in my free time to keep it going. But that's why I'm also asking for people to participate and show us here in LA, other cities that have certain areas like this, and so we can learn about the people over there.
With the opportunity to have portable media, you can take a laptop or an iPad and show stuff on YouTube. Have you had the opportunity to take what you've done and show the finished product to the people who are in your film?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Actually, when I had a rough cut of episode one, the one that's out right now, I put it on my phone, I brought my headphones, and I biked over to Skid Row. I spent a half hour trying to find someone very specific who has a big part in the second episode and an even bigger part in the third. And I sat down with him on the curb and watched him watch it. And he thought it was a really cool idea, and it convinced him that, hey, we're not... we're serious about this, and it enticed him to collaborate with us in the future.
You are doing this currently in short versions. The first episode is 12 minutes on YouTube, and you're doing episodes. Have you given any thought to taking whatever you get over a period of time and doing a longer version as perhaps a feature film or a television documentary of some kind?
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, these videos serve lots of purposes, and when you put them together, you could use it as a pitch for a TV show or as a short form documentary, or I'm sure with all the footage that we have, we could make a feature length one. Or if someone came to me and had an idea of some other area they wanted to expose and something, a story that they think that they could explore and discover that would be in feature length form, I would be open to doing that, collaborating with them, or doing it myself. But yeah, right now, I think it's just this short form piece of entertainment, awareness, and activism that I think is easy for people to watch and just kind of grasp onto.
Well, it's a most interesting idea, and I'm looking forward to seeing the other
Thanks.
Episodes that come out. It's called Lifeline Booth. People can find it on YouTube. You'll find the link on the website here on the Stuff File program. Ryan, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much for spreading the word.
Ryan Oxenberg. The short film episodes on YouTube are called Lifeline Booth. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0204, and you'll find links to the YouTube page. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It's time to announce the grand prize winner in our 16th annual Wacky Warning Labels contest. You may remember that we announced the five finalists about a month ago. Recently, a studio audience picked the grand prize winner on a national television show. The grand prize of $1,000 goes to Jeff Dudka of Michigan. He found a label on a common indoor extension cord that actually warns, wash hands after handling. Let's be fair, labels like this are hilarious, but product makers have to put them there because they're facing so many frivolous lawsuits. A few years ago, a popular tool maker was sued by a man who used one of their wood routers to try to fix his teeth. After that, the company put a label on the tool warning that it's not to be used as a dental drill. Unbelievable, but true. To see all the labels and to learn more about how we all pay for lawsuit abuse, even if we're never sued, visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the author of Catalyst. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. On a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. An Oklahoma meth dealer who hid a loaded gun in her vagina, yeah, when she was arrested, has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. Christy Dawn Harris, age 28, pleaded no contest to possession of methamphetamine with intent to distribute, gun possession, and bringing contraband into jail. She'd already been convicted on a long list of felony charges. Upon arresting Harris, Officer Kathy Unberwist reported, "I observed at that time a wooden and metal item sticking out of her vagina area." The officer pulled the item from her vagina and found it to be a 5-shot revolver with rounds in the chamber. She was sentenced to 25 years for each charge to be served concurrently. That is one pistol-packing mama. That's all I have to say. Wonder what her dating life was like. Anyway, Sean Panerol was questioned by police in Carlsbad, New Mexico in May on a loud music complaint and concern that he already had an outstanding arrest warrant, gave his name as Sean Paul. Panerol thus became the most recent perp to choose his alias badly. Sean Paul, whomever he is also wanted by police in New Mexico, and Panerol was arrested for the false ID. Oopsie! And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here's a creepy story out of New Jersey. It seems a commuter videotaped 41-year-old New Jersey bus driver George Simpson Jr. enjoying the pleasure of his own company while behind the wheel. Can you picture it? Yeah. The video shows him maneuvering the bus through heavy traffic and the Lincoln Tunnel while pleasuring himself. The bus was traveling from New Jersey to New York City. New Jersey Transit Police have charged Simpson with risking injury or damage by removing his hands from the wheel. He is also accused of lewdness and reckless driving. In a statement, a New Jersey Transit spokesperson said the driver was immediately removed from service without pay because of a disturbing and grossly irresponsible conduct. Gee, I wonder how he'll spend his downtime. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Alex Sanga is the author of Catalyst, a collection of commentaries to get us talking. The book is considered a tool to encourage conversation about subjects that are sometimes hard to talk about. Alex joins us on the line right now from Vancouver. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
So taking your title, what was the catalyst to write this book?
Well, actually, the catalyst is actually the young adults and the high school students and the youth who read my columns and who are inspired to bring about change in their communities and in their neighborhoods. And the catalyst, I mean, my goal in writing this was to pick 40 of my favorite columns and to add some questions and some quotes and some pictures and some text and get people thinking, get people talking, get people discussing and get them to make some change. And the catalyst is actually the readers. That's the meaning behind the name.
Okay. The columns originally appeared where?
Well, in different places, like in my local papers, like the Surrey Leader and the Georgia Strait and the Vancouver Observer, and different columns were published in different press in Vancouver area.
And why do you think some of the subjects you discuss are hard to talk about?
Well, as someone who is openly gay and someone who is also South Asian, and, it was difficult for me to come out and be accepted in my community. And even today, members of my family, some members of my family don't accept me as a gay person. So not only did I have to experience kind of like an alienation and isolation and loneliness as a gay person and accept myself, but I also experienced that within my community. And I talk about these kind of issues because I think it's important to provide some kind of hope and some kind of support and some kind of information for other people like myself, so they can come out and they don't feel like they're alone. And I think people don't sometimes understand how difficult it is for people from different cultural backgrounds and communities, how difficult it is for them to, they're different than the mainstream because there's so much pressure on them to get married and have children and to be more collective and support their families and be together and have these family, extended family units. And it can be very difficult sometimes if you are different.
So you discussed the gay issues in Catalyst. What other issues do you talk about that are, again, somewhat difficult to talk about?
I talk about arranged marriage. I talk about the sex trade. And basically, I talk about, I'm very passionate as someone who was raised, largely by a single mother. And I talk about a lot of people who are marginalized in society, such as sex workers, people with disabilities, people with mental illness. I talk about employment equity and affirmative action issues. I talk about, getting more women into politics. And I talk about a lot of groups of people which I feel need more of a voice in society and need more advocacy. Like, I feel part of my job as a social worker and a social advocate is to speak for people and to help people to, to have their issues heard and to get the discussion going. And, like, I'm not pretending like I know all the answers and I have all the solutions to everything. So that's why it's a social discussion book. It's like, let's just talk about it. Let's just see what other people's ideas are and what they feel is the solutions to, inequality and poverty and depression and trying to get, solutions to unemployment and all these things.
You talk about it. You mentioned earlier the mainstream. Do you find that this is a book that is going to be appealing to a mainstream audience other than the groups that you've discussed, the minority groups and other groups that might be on the fringes that you discuss in your book?
Well, it's interesting. I did send out the book to a number of people in the BC Teachers Federation here in Vancouver. I sent it to their social justice director, and she read the book, and she's profiling it in their news magazine and sending it to all the schools and librarians. And so that was a big break for me. And yes, you have to realize I'm writing from my life experience, and I do belong into these groups. I have family members who have mental illness. I was raised by a single mother. I am a gay person. I am a visible minority. And so I write from this perspective, but, that doesn't mean I'm not Canadian and that I don't realize and understand or can't relate to the mainstream. So I write from a certain perspective, but because I was born in England and raised in Canada, I can still relate to the mainstream, and I think they would find it interesting to read my book.
We as Canadians live all along the Canadian border with the United States for the most part. Do you find that the experiences you write about as a Canadian in your situation differs from somebody who might be having a similar situation or a similar background from the United States?
Yeah, I did an interview yesterday in New York City, and they asked me that, what do Canadians think of Americans and what in terms of some topics in my book. And I said, I find my perception of the U.S. is very individualistic, and there's a big focus on human rights and entrepreneurship and success and individual liberty and freedoms. And I find in Canada, people have a little bit more of a collective understanding, taking care of each other and what is best for the greater good. And, just the fact that, they have the right to bear guns and all these kind of rights. And I'm thinking, like, here that would be something that would not really be heard of, and they have the death penalty in the U.S. And I do write one chapter on the death penalty in my book, and that is something that I have such strong feelings about because, I mentioned on the show that, you never know if you have the death penalty as a policy in your country that you're actually hanging the right person. You might be actually literally killing an innocent person. And I find that is reason enough to abolish such a practice. And I find, you have to respect. I mean, that reason alone, you know, I have strong feelings for that. And I think, you know, because in the U.S., so many people who are caught up in the prison system and the criminal justice system are minorities. You know, they're African Americans, they're Latino people, they're Aboriginal people, they're people with mental illness. Basically, it's the prison system is a way to just execute all these undesirables, you know, and that society thinks are undesirable. And I think it's horribly biased, and it's a very screwed up system, and that is one of the things I talk about in my book.
The very idea of having discussion, which naturally is, if you have people discussing things on from various sides, leads to debate. Do you find, generally speaking, as a society, and I'm talking both Canada and the United States, we seem to have lost the art of debate? And I bring that up because it seems people are completely polarized. There's either you're on the left or you're on the right, and you're not willing to listen to what the arguments the person on the other side has to say.
Yeah, actually, this is a sad thing about politics and political parties and our partisan system is people are on the left and the right, and they think they're all 100% correct, and no one's 100% correct. I mean, there's a lot of good ideas from all sides, and what we need to start thinking is becoming critical thinkers, and we need to think, okay, well, wait a minute. Maybe this is a good policy, and maybe some ideas over here are good, and how can we work together to come up with, you know, with a policy that's in the best interest of Canadians and all Canadians. And basically what happens is when a party gets elected, they just serve their own interests, I think, and their supporters, and just ram as much, you know, laws and legislation they can that they support. And usually it ends up alienating huge chunks of the population, because if you look at the federal government now with Stephen Harper, I'm not saying anything bad against Stephen Harper, but I'm saying he was only elected with 39% of the vote, and he has a majority, and he can pretty much do whatever he wants. And, you know, is that really a fair system? Is that the way our political system should be designed? And I talk about I do talk about some political reform, a few columns on that, but in my book, it's at the local level. It's not at the federal level. And there is room for improvement. And I think if we have the debate, if we have the discussion, then that'd be the best.
The book is called Catalyst, a collection of commentaries to get us talking. It's written by Alex Sanga. Alex, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much.
Alex Sanga, author of Catalyst, a collection of commentaries to get us talking. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0204, and you'll find links to Alex's site, plus also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Ingram County Sheriff Gene Wigglesworth called it a case of one of the world's dumbest criminals. A 28-year-old man charged with fraud arrived at the Sheriff's Office Central Records Unit in Mason to submit to court-ordered fingerprints stemming from a charge of fraud in Ingram County District Court. The man of Ingram County tried to use a credit card to pay for the $16 cost, but when the office staff ran the card, it came back reported as stolen, said Wigglesworth. Is it any wonder the jail was overcrowded the last 7 days? Major Joel Maitman has been in law enforcement for over 40 years. He says instances like this are rare. We have had people come in here and write bad checks, but it doesn't happen very often, he said. Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't. Why? Why? Oh, why would someone waltz into the sheriff's office to pay a fraud charge and try and use a stolen credit card? Well, one reason and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0204. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0204. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, I always screw it up.